Morning, church. Good morning to those of you on our online family, Baghdad. Good morning. We hope you are well. Paulden, welcome to you. And anywhere you find yourself on the online family, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for doing life with us. And those of you in the room, extra special welcome to you. We are glad we get to do life together. We're glad to get to journey alongside one another. And you'll hear more about ways to do that today. But one of the ways that stands out to me is that we journey through seasons as a church. And I don't know why, but this weekend, God just got me reflecting. I was at Park Collective last night. And as I'm standing there, I begin reflecting on the journey of Park Collective and the conversations that started years before, just between a few people, and then they rumbled through leadership, and leadership began to talk about it, and then it went to another leadership level, and there was these seasons of just talking, right? And then there became seasons of, man, we really feel God is leading us in this direction. And so there became seasons of putting on paper, what does that look like? And where would it be? And how would it be? And there were seasons of searching. And then we began to have a lot, much larger conversation with the entire church going, we really feel like God is moving us to start something at Park Collective, and which we didn't even know the name at that point. And it was just this beautiful moment of these seasons of God leading us and us stepping in as a church family. And then kind of combining our efforts to go, we're in this season together. And those of you that were here, you'll remember there was, we had a moment where people stepped in and said, you know what, I will give towards this. And I'm committing for the next 3 years to do that. And so we went through that season when we found a location, we went through the building season. And it all hit me last night standing there. The room was full. And I go, this was an old grocery store. And it was this beautiful moment of worship happening in this grocery store and going, the season that we went through, and now it's in a different season. It's in a season of growth and finding its feet. And we're in a season of growth and figuring out services. And we moved to three and all that kind of stuff. And it just made me extremely thankful for how God walks with us in each one of those seasons and yet how we walk together in those. And if you're here, welcome. You're invited in. If you showed up and it's the first time you're here and you're going, I don't even know what this is. It's a bunch of people that have said yes to Jesus and we're just following him wherever it goes. And so you might have picked up from the story, we don't know where it goes. We're just along for the ride too. And the invitation is that you can join the family and you can be a part of the family and we can get to do things for the kingdom of God that he calls us to together. And it's this amazing journey. But it brings up this thing of seasons, right? And if you were here last week, we talked very specifically a lot about seasons of time, kind of physical seasons in a way. And the big takeaway from last week, in case you missed it, was you have to know your season, right? And your season is specific to you. You have to know the season you are in. Why? So that you can know the activity that goes with that season for you to be able to get out of that season everything that God's put in it for you. And so we moved on from there. And this week, we're moving into this idea that there are seasons of faith. What I mean by that is this, that you may have showed up at a church gathering like this at some point in your life, and you didn't know who Jesus was, and you got invited by somebody, and so you just happened to stumble into the room, and in that process, you were introduced, whether it was by somebody from up front, or somebody next to you, or conversations with coworkers, like however it came to be for you, but somebody along the way went, hey, let me tell you about this Jesus. And somewhere along the way in your season of faith, you went, you know what? I believe what you're telling me is true, and I'm going to step into faith and claim him as my savior. I'm going to personalize this, and I'm going to step into relationship with God. And at that point, your seasons of faith changed. It went from encountering Jesus and meeting him and seeing him in a different way to now a season of growth. And for some of you, you may find that season of growth led you to be baptized, right? At the end of the month, we have baptisms coming again. And what are baptisms? Baptisms are just you saying, I believe that this Jesus is mine, and I'm going to tell everybody else. And so I'm going to do it physically with my life. And so baptism was a step for you. It was a season of faith and a step of faith. And maybe out of that, you heard about this thing called growth track, right? That we do as a church. And so one of the ways for us as a church family that we grow, we have this thing called growth track. And you may have gone to that and you're like, man, I met Jesus. I got baptized. I'm on this high and everything's moving fast. And you got into that season and somebody goes, you know what? There's this thing called serving. And you're like, oh, I want to be a part of that. And so you stepped in and you served and your season shifted again. And all the way through, right, at some point you sat in a room like this and people like me went, man, rows are great and circles are even better. That when you get heart to heart with somebody and you went, I don't have anybody I sit in a circle with as a life group and we talk heart to heart. And so you stepped into life group. And there's these seasons that are appropriate for the growth that we have. Right? We work through those seasons. And some of them are difficult seasons too, though, right? Because seasons of faith can be, I'm in a season of plenty. And some of you are like, I'm waiting for that season. Can we get to that one? Right? Like, I'm in a season of plenty. God just keeps showing up and it's abundant and he's overwhelming. And then some people are like, man, I'm in a season of scarcity. I don't know how we make this work. I don't know how we put all this together right now. Sometimes it's a season of closeness, right? Like I feel really close to God and my faith feels really strong. And then there's seasons where I'm like, God, where are you? I feel distant from you. There's seasons of waiting and there's seasons of going. There's seasons of stepping in and there's seasons. And here's what's interesting with all these, right? Is all of these are about a journey with God, about building your relationship with God. And today we're going to talk specifically about a season that I can guarantee you that if you're human, you will experience this season in your life. It's the season of waiting. It's the season of waiting. You ever talk to a high schooler about when they're just maybe a freshman going in and you're like, okay, you got 4 years of this. And then if you go to college, you got 4 years, maybe longer, depending on what you choose to do. And they literally look at you and they're like, oh, that feels like forever. That's my whole life. Right? And you talk to somebody on the other end of the spectrum that is a little older and they're looking at you and you're talking to them and you're like, I don't have time for this. Right? They're so prevalent that their days are numbered that they're like, we don't have time for this. We got to go. And they look at other people and go, oh, that season of 8 years will pass like that. Right? And waiting's a weird thing because it's about perspective and where you find yourself in that perspective. And I love how practical the Bible is for us. Right? I love how practical the Bible takes characters and pulls them in and brings them out. And as I was looking at this character this week, it reminded me, this whole idea of reminded me, or of waiting, reminded me of picking up my kids from school, right? So I got a 10-year-old, her name is Farah. I got a 12-year-old, her name is Bailey. And my wife went out of town about 2 months ago, something like that. And so she's like, okay, you're on pickup duty. Yes, ma'am. What time do I need to be there? Your first one's at 2:45. Okay, got it. Well, you need to know something about my kids. Bailey, who's 12, she's a little different to pick up. Because she's like, Dad, you need to be here at 2:44. And you need to be standing in this spot, right? And she goes, I'll be, if not the first, close to the first out the door. And so I'm like, okay, got it, 2:44. You guys, I was so proud of myself. I was 11 minutes early. If you know me, that never happens, ever, right? And so now I'm sitting in the car. I'm in a season of waiting, right? And I'm like, okay, we're here early. This is good. I'm texting my wife. I'm here early, you know? And as I'm sitting there, I'm like, oh, I have enough time. I could go get coffee, right? And I'm like, no, that's a bad idea. Put that idea away, right? Like, you gotta stay present. And I'm like, okay, stay present. I'm here. And then the car was kind of warm. You know, the sun was coming through and it'd been a long day at that point, and now I'm kind of sleepy. And so I feel this nap coming on, and I literally caught myself falling asleep. And I'm like, you cannot sleep right now. So 2:44 came. I was in my spot. I was waiting. She was the second one out the door. I'm like, yes, baby, we are out of here. We are gone before the traffic gets crazy, and we're on to the next child. Well, the next one is Farah, and she's 10. And the only thing she told me is just be at the bottom of the stairs. Okay, I can do that. I will be at the bottom of the stairs. So I show up, we're on time, Even though my 12-year-old critiqued the whole process of how I drove there versus how her mama drives there. Apparently her mama is a much better navigator of the roads than I am. I chose the long way. And I'm like, we still made it on time, right? So we get there and I'm at the bottom of the stairs. And I see kids coming down, lots of kids, and even more kids. And some of those kids got on buses, and teachers were there. And teachers are looking at me like, should we be concerned? You have no children, and you're just hanging out at the bottom of the stairs. To which I was like, well, I'm not going to make it awkward. I'll just get on my phone, distract myself from waiting, right? And so I'm on my phone and I'm distracting myself and I'm waiting and waiting and the line of kids gets less and less and the more kids get on the bus and my fare is nowhere to be seen. And so I continue to wait and now I'm getting annoyed, right? Because this is delaying. I don't like to be delayed. Like, we got places to go, things to do. Way more fun than standing at the bottom of the stairs. And wouldn't you know that I struggled to stay present because I wanted to be somewhere else. And in the process of that, I take out my phone and I'm so into what I'm doing on my phone that she walks right past me. Thankfully, my 12-year-old was like, she just walked right past you. And we picked her up and she's still with our family. It's good. It's great. But isn't it interesting that from a physical sense of waiting, we can gain an awful lot of things that we find in the character and life of people in Scripture? And the characters in the Bible, you know, sometimes I think we think that if Jesus was here, you guys, I wouldn't have to wait. I beg to differ, right? There was this guy named Lazarus. He was really sick. And Mary and Martha sent word. They were friends of Jesus. And it says that the word got to Jesus and he just hung out a couple more days and Lazarus died. Right? I think waiting is intentional in God's economy. I think waiting is one of the gifts that he gives us. And I'll be honest with you. I don't know how you feel about waiting. I am not a patient waiter, which is probably why God makes me wait. Right? I'm not one that embraces waiting like, oh, I'm in a season of waiting. I'm like, no, let's go, God. We got stuff to do. And in the story that we're going to look at, it's in Genesis chapter 12. Genesis, if you're not familiar with the Bible or church, it's the first book of the Bible. It's the book of beginnings. And in Genesis 12, verse 1, it says this, the Lord had said to Abram, go from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation and I will bless you and I will make your name great. And you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all the peoples on the earth will be blessed through you. So Abram went as the Lord told him and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he set out from Haran. He took his wife Sarai, his nephew Lot, all the possessions they had accumulated, and the people they had acquired in Haran, and they set out for the land of Canaan, and they arrived there. Verse 7, two verses later, says this, the Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your offspring I will give this land. So he built an altar there to the Lord who had appeared to him. So, character in the Bible that we're looking at is Abram. You might know him as Abraham. God changes his name later. We may interchange those, just know it's the same person. Right? But Abram, we don't have any background. God comes to him and God makes a promise to Abram. Now this sounds exciting, right? God showed up. He promised me something. But what I need you to see is that the promise actually puts him in a season of waiting. Because the promise is talking about, hey, through you, Abram, I'm going to bless everybody. Can I tell you that promise is still living on today through the person of Jesus? The promise came in the person of Jesus. And what was it? To bless all of humanity. Every single one of us is blessed through this promise. But at the time when the promise is made, he's going, Abram, I'm going to bless everybody through you. And then Abram goes to see a land. And when he gets to the land, God shows up and God tells him, this is the land I am going to give to your descendants. Abram is in a season of waiting. God has promised him something, but where he finds himself today is not where God is leading him. He's in a season of waiting to see what happens. And in verse 10 of that same chapter, it says this, now there was a famine in the land. And Abram went down to Egypt to live there for a while because the famine was severe. Okay, so he's in a season of waiting. And what I want you to catch is this, that just because he's in one season of promise and waiting, it doesn't mean that there's not another season going on. And the season inside of the season, if you like, is this season of famine. It's a season of shortage. It's a season of, hey, God, are you going to provide or not? And so he leaves the land that God had told him he was going to give to his descendants, and he goes down into Egypt. And on the way down there, he looks at his wife, Sarai, and he goes, hey, you're really good looking. The Egyptians are going to know that. And it's not going to go well for me if I'm your husband. So let's do this. When we get down there, you tell them you're my sister. Then it's going to go well for me. Right? So they go down there. Sure enough, they pull this ruse, this whole story of she's my sister. Well, the Egyptians, here's the thing, they're not blind. And so the Egyptians look at her and they go, wow, she's really beautiful. You need to come meet Pharaoh, who's the king. And they take her and they put her in Pharaoh's household and they put her in Pharaoh's harem and as one of his wives. And so you can imagine, meanwhile, Pharaoh is sending all kinds of stuff to her brother, all kinds of possessions, all kinds of livestock and wealth are going to Abram at this point. And over here, poor old Sarai is where? In the harem of the king. And it's in the midst of that that God shows up. And God causes a disease, a severe disease on the house of Pharaoh. And the severe disease is so intense that Pharaoh starts to ask questions like, why is this happening? Who's causing this? And then what comes out of that is Pharaoh discovers, wait a minute, you've been living this con. You're the cause of this. You need to go. And where do they go? They go back up to the land that God had promised them, right? They've gone back up to where they should have been. You see, the season of famine made them question where they were. But here's what you need to see. God hasn't changed in your season of waiting. In the season of waiting, God was still the same provider he had always been for Abraham. What had changed was the circumstances. And because the circumstances in the season of waiting changed, then he goes to solve that problem. And in the midst, he missed what God was doing. And so now you've got Abram, who's kicked out with all his wealth. You've got Lot, his nephew, and he has a whole bunch of stuff. And they get up back to the country and they begin to look and go, wait, we got too much livestock for this land to sustain us. Our houses are too big. You're gonna have to leave and go somewhere else, and then I'll live wherever you don't choose. Lot being, you know, like us, Lot looks out and he goes, huh, that's really lush and has lots of water. This doesn't. I'll take that one, right? And so they separate ways. But when they separate ways, here's what God does to in the life of Abram. The Lord comes and speaks to him, and in chapter 13 and verse 15, it says this, all the land that you see, I will give to you and your offspring forever. I will make your offspring like the dust of the earth, so that if anyone could count the dust, then your offspring could be counted. Go walk through the length and breadth of the land, for I am giving it to you. What does God do? He re-ups the promise. He reminds him, hey, I haven't changed. And maybe what you need to know in your season of waiting is God doesn't change. God's not going to change his mind tomorrow. God's not going to change his character. God's not going to change his faithfulness. God's not going to change what he's put in front of you. He's going to walk with you inside it and prove who he is. And in this moment with Abram, he comes back and he goes, hey, the promise still stands. To which then a chapter later, God and Abraham are having a conversation again. And Abraham says this, verse 2, but Abram said, Sovereign Lord, what can you give me since I remain childless? And the one who will inherit my estate is Eliezer of Damascus. And Abram said, you have given me no children, so a servant in my household will be my heir. Then the word of the Lord came to him, this man will not be your heir, but a son who is your own flesh and blood will be your heir. He took him outside and said, look up at the sky and count the stars, if indeed you can count them. Then he said to him, so shall your offspring be. Verse 6, Abram believed the Lord and he credited it to him as righteousness. What changed? Nothing changed, right? But there's this thing called logic. And when you get in a season of waiting, logic is not your friend. Because what logic starts to do, especially as the time gets longer, is logic starts to look at all the problems to get to where you want to be. Logic starts to figure out that, hey, there's some parts missing. And so for Abram, he's sitting there and he's going, okay, I understand the sand analogy, but to have all those grains of sand, right? I'm missing one grain of sand. I don't have an heir. I don't have a son. I don't have a child. God, how can your promise possibly come true if I don't have my own offspring? And so logic kicks in, and in the season of waiting, what starts to happen is he starts to doubt what? What God has said, because in front of him, he can't see it to be true. Just because you're in a season of waiting and you can't see what you think should be there doesn't mean that God doesn't see it. Sometimes I think what we see, we think God sees. God doesn't see like you see. And faith requires that we actually walk by what God sees, not by what we see. And in this season where confusion sets in, right? I would call it a season of confusion for Abram. He's going, I just don't understand. Like, if this is going to be true, I don't know if you know this, God, I'm getting a little bit older. And what happens is God takes him outside and gives him a different picture. Takes him outside, he goes, look at the sky. See all those stars? That's what your descendants are gonna be like. And it says that Abram, from it's the exact same thing God's been saying all along. God just re-ups it with a different picture. And it's the picture he needs in that moment to go, God, I believe you, and I'll stand on that, and I'll walk forward in this season. So which then chapter 16 happens? Now Sarai, in verse 1, now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children, but she had an Egyptian slave named Hagar. So she said to Abram, the Lord has kept me from having children. Go sleep with my slave. Perhaps I can build a family through her. Abram agreed to what Sarai said. So after Abram had been living in Canaan 10 years, Sarai, his wife, took her Egyptian slave Hagar and gave her to her husband to be his wife. He slept with Hagar and she conceived. When she knew she was pregnant, she began to despise her mistress. Right? So what's happened? We're in a season of waiting. It's now 10 years. That's a long time. And in the 10 years, what Abraham decides to do is he goes, I'm going to be helpful. I'm going to help God figure this out. Because the way this thing kicks off is I have an heir. And so Sarai's like, hey, let's help God out because obviously things aren't moving. Maybe we should do it this way. And here's what's interesting. Like, as humans, we don't like to wait. But in our culture, we hate waiting. You know how I know? I've seen some of you at stoplights. Right? You delayed 3 seconds. Some of you, this is my favorite part right now. Oh, the traffic. It's so bad. I had to wait 3 cycles of the light. Wow. Right? Go to California for a day. You'll be back and be like, we ain't got no traffic. We're great. I think about it. You go to a restaurant and your food's not coming quick enough. And some of you go, I could go in the back and help them. Right? We don't like to wait. Think about your cell phone. It goes all the way to space and back. And we're like, huh. The internet's down because you waited 5 seconds for your page to load. I'm as guilty as charged. I'm standing at the bottom of the steps and my daughter's delayed and what's happening? I'm having anxiety inside because there's places I want to go and things I want to do. We hate waiting. And can we humanize with Abram for a moment? He's been waiting 10 years. Sometimes we look at this and we go, why would he do that? Why would you do what you do at a stoplight? 10 years of a promise. And he decides, I'm going to step in and I'm going to help God out. To which God goes, actually, you're not. In verse 16 of that same chapter, it says, Abram was 86 years old. 86 years old, 11 years later from when this all started, when Hagar bore him Ishmael. Next chapter says this in verse 15, God also said to Abraham, as for Sarai, your wife, you are no longer to call her Sarai. Her name will be Sarah. I will bless her and will surely give you a son by her. I will bless her so that she will be the mother of nations. Kings of people will come from her. Abraham fell face down. He laughed and said to himself, will a son be born to a man 100 years old? Will Sarah bear a child at the age of 90? And Abraham said to God, if only Ishmael might live under your blessing. God, if only you'd use this other way. Then God said, yes, but your wife Sarah will bear you a son and you will call him Isaac. I will establish my covenant with him as an everlasting covenant for his descendants after him. And as for Ishmael, I have heard you. I will surely bless him. I will make him fruitful and will greatly increase his numbers. He will be the father of 12 rulers and I will make him into a great nation. But my covenant I will establish with Isaac, whom Sarah will bear to you by this time next year. Can you imagine how sweet the sound must have been of God going, this is now 24 years in, and God going, by this time next year, just hang on, Abraham. This time next year, you're gonna see the promise come to be. Oh, I know it's almost been 25 years, but you're almost there. Isn't it amazing that in a season of waiting, that when you get a glimmer of hope of the season ending, you're like, I can hang on. I can do this. But it's in the unknown that we struggle. It's in the unknown that we become impatient. It's in the unknown that we struggle to stay present. It's in the unknown that I want to help God out. And that's where faith comes into waiting, that you will stand and go, you are still God today, the same God you were yesterday, and your promise is still true. Your love has not moved. Your care for me has not moved. You have not changed who I am and the value that I hold as your son and your daughter. And so I will stay in this season when I cannot see. But oh, how sweet it is when you go, it's coming to an end. I got an answer. It's coming to an end. I got the healing I've been craving. It's coming to an end because God showed up and he showed me what's to come. I see what is amazing about this is in the next chapter, these visitors show up and you got to read that for yourself. It's pretty amazing. But because of the time change, Abraham is so present that he sees these visitors and recognizes them from the Lord, and they have another word. They re-up the promise. And as they're re-upping it, Sarah hears it. And the re-upping of the promise is, hey, by this time next year, you're gonna have a kid. And she starts laughing. She's like, yeah, right. And as the Lord speaks to Abraham, he says this in verse 14, is anything too hard for the Lord? Is anything too hard for the Lord? I don't know what you're going through today, but don't you quit. Don't you give up. Because whatever you're going through is not too hard for the Lord. Don't you settle for the enemy's lies. The enemy that wants to tell you that God has left you. He has not left you. He is near and he is present and he is as close as your breath. Don't you buy the enemy's lies that he can't come through on that promise because you're too old. Or you're not adequate enough. The point of the story is that in the midst of waiting, Abraham discovers there is nothing too hard for God. And God being who he is in chapter 21, now the Lord was gracious to Sarah, as he had said, and the Lord did for Sarah what he had promised. Why? Because you can go through the entire Bible. You can talk to people that have walked with Jesus for a long time, and what they will tell you, a consistent testimony, is that God never does not come through on his word. He is always faithful, and he is always true, and he will always show up and do what he said he would do. You know why you don't have to fear death? Because we are told that one of the promises of Jesus dying is that you got life and you got life for eternity on that cross. So what do I know about death? It is not my master and it is not where I end. It is not your master and is not where you end. In Jesus, there is life eternal. And we can bank on that promise. Why? Because he is faithful and true. How do I know that? Stories like this. Verse 2. Sarah became pregnant and bore a son to Abraham in his old age, at the very time God had promised. Abraham gave the name Isaac to the son Sarah bore him. At the very time that God said. You know why we don't like that? Because just like me standing at the bottom of the stairs, I'm not in control of the timing. She's in control of the timing. And she might've got distracted by a bird. And she's like, it's okay, my dad'll still be waiting. Your dad'll still be waiting. Right, but he's in control of the time. At his perfect time, the promise came true. I don't know, again, what you walked in with, but can I give you three things? Because here's what I know. If you're in a season of waiting, it's hard, right? We talked about it. As humans, we don't like it. But if you're in a season of waiting, I want to give you three things to help you in your season of waiting. And if you're in a season where you're not waiting, just get ready. These are to get ready because it's coming. And the three things are this: stay present. Number one, stay present in his presence. Stay present in his presence. God is in it with you, so stay present. He's there. Whatever you're going through, whatever you're in, he is there, so stay present with him. Right? Just like me standing at the bottom of the stairs, I have to stay present. And for you, stay present in the waiting, stay present in his presence. What does that mean? Be aware. Where do I see God's fingerprints? Because what's amazing, we look back at Abraham's story and we have the beauty of reading a whole bunch of his life in 30 minutes, or maybe a few more than 30, right? And here's what's amazing. We would go, man, I see God's fingerprints all over the life of Abraham. And it was all through his waiting. Someday you will look back at your waiting and go, I see God's fingerprints all over. But in the process of staying present, be aware he's there. James chapter 1, verse 2 through 4 talks about consider it, count it, all joy. What? When you go through trials of various kinds. Why, James? Why would we count it joy when we're in the midst of a waiting season? Because it's for your good, because God's growing you. He's building stuff in you. So you can count it as joy. Stay present and count it as joy. Be expectant. God's up to something and he's using you. So be expectant with it. The second one is delay gratification. What that means is delay what I want when I want it, right? Because there's things that I want, and what'll pull you out of waiting quicker than anything is dissatisfaction with God's timetable. And so I will jump out and I'll go fix it, just like Abram. I can have a kid. You can use him, right? Be patient. Delay what you want and pick up what God wants. Don't short circuit what God is doing by your impatience and your desire to help God. And the last one for all the control freaks in the room, I got amazing news for you. You ready? The last one is this. Control the usage of your time. What can you control in this moment? Just like standing at the bottom of the steps, I can control what I do. Right? I've been given a gift of time by my daughter who decides when she comes. But in that moment, I can control that time and the usage of that time. In your waiting, you get to choose what you do in the waiting. But you need to know God's there with you. What's beautiful about the story of Abraham? As you fast forward a little bit and Isaac is born, right? And when Isaac gets to a certain point in his life, God goes, hey, Abraham, I need you to do something for me. You willing to give up Isaac? I mean, Abraham, I need you to sacrifice him to me, which is weird. And that's Bible stuff. We can talk about that another day. And they go out and they're getting ready to go up to the mountain. This boy that was promised, God's gonna have Abraham sacrifice his son. Then who would the descendants come through? Is the natural logical question, right? So much so that they're getting ready to go up the mountain, and Isaac looks at his dad. He goes, hey, I see the wood and I see us going on a journey, but where's the sacrifice? And Abraham has the faith to say in that moment, don't worry about it, God will provide. Where did Abraham learn that God would provide? It was in the season of waiting for the season he wasn't in yet. I don't know what your next season is, but I know God's preparing you today in the waiting for that season. Don't you give up. Don't you leave it. Don't stop believing. Stay present. Delay what you want for what he wants. And control your time. You can do an awful lot in the waiting. You get to choose what that is. And you get to choose how you walk with him in the waiting. Oh, Heights family, whether you're here or you're across the screen, may you find the most uncomfortable season of waiting, the most painful season of waiting. May you find them so rich and life-giving. May you look back someday and may you see where you end up and look back and go, God was preparing us the whole time for this, because nothing is wasted with God. Would you pray with me? God, we come before you. God, we are so grateful. We're just your kids. We're those that you've saved by grace, those that don't deserve it. We couldn't earn it. God, that you are present with us today, right here, right now. That you delight in the journey you have us on. That you walk with us in the midst of the waiting, in the midst of the pain, in the midst of the frustration, in the midst of the impatient. Would you help us today, God, to just stay present, to be aware of your fingerprints, to choose joy because we know you're up to something. God, would you, as only you can, give us the strength to choose what you want and not what we want. And God, may we use our time like these next moments when we stand and we sing. Would you use these next moments to build in us the faith to continue to wait on you? As we declare, God, we look to you. Who else could we look to? We don't have it. So God, we look to you. You are where our help comes from. You are where our strength is. Thank you for loving us. Thank you for grace and mercy. And everybody said, amen.